Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 28th of January, 2013, and today we are talking with Mike Bilosky, one half of the team behind The Last Defense, which is at thelastdefense2012.tumblr.com. And I'm not sure, Mike, if that's the best address or if you have a shorter domain name for that.
Well, I find the easiest thing is just tell people, Google The Last Defense 2012, first thing that comes up. So, easiest way to find it.
Excellent. Well, of course, it will also be linked up in the show notes for this interview so people can find a direct link to the website where you are keeping an eye on, well, a lot of things related not only to the Asian region, but also, of course, to America and to a lot of political news and commentary. So I hope people are checking out The Last Defense 2012. But on that note, there are some very interesting things developing on the Korean Peninsula where you are currently. So let's start getting into this. And perhaps, I'm not sure where you want to start, but I think maybe we could start with the last month's election.
Of course. Yes, we got the conservative candidate. And, well, what happened, that the latest missile test ties into that, because basically a week before the election, They closed the polling, and the polling between Park Geun-hye, the woman who won, and Moon Jae-in, the opposing liberal candidate, it's only about 1% difference, and he was gaining momentum, so you could have argued he was going to win, but there was the missile launch, and you know how the Hegelian dialectic, I'm sure your audience is familiar with that, where if an event happens, people react to it, they might vote differently in an election. Or accept new policies, et cetera, et cetera. And so that may have affected the election. And that also, well, I think your election over in Japan was more of a landslide. But in any case, I think that the whole region would have been tipping a little bit more conservative after that event, the missile launch.
And I'm not deeply versed in Korean politics, but as I understand it, the prime minister-elect is, in fact, the daughter of the former dictator there.
Yes, she is the daughter of Park Chung-hee. This guy he's sort of a double-edged sword for Korean history. He's credited with building up South Korea into what is today the world's 11th largest economy today in the world, which is amazing because this nation's only 50 million people. But he's also criticized for being somewhat of a dictator and arresting political dissidents. Actually, the liberal candidate who ran against Park Geun-hye in the election was a political activist who obviously was active against her father during that time. So there's definitely a backstory here. Also, North Korea was the people who were sending assassins to kill eventually her mother and her father. They were both assassinated. Actually, he was assassinated. Her father was assassinated by one of his initial intelligence advisor. But in any case, there's definitely some bad blood between North Korea and Park Geun-hye.
Absolutely. Well, let's start talking then about this latest incident, because as you alluded to, there has been this threat that North Korea is now making of nuclear retaliation against not only the United States, but against South Korea for the latest UN resolution that was passed in condemnation of the North Korean satellite launch last month. Let's talk a little bit about this situation and how it has really developed.
Okay, well, first of all, I think that the media in general is making way big a deal of this. You know, it's funny. I actually first read about this on Friday in the newspaper coming home from work. And then we were exchanging messages over the weekend. What do you want to talk about? And I thought we were going to talk, you know, maybe more about economics or the election. And you mentioned that you wanted to focus on this threat from North Korea. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, I read about this on Friday and it just kind of went over my head. And my point here is that there's kind of a boy who cried wolf syndrome in Korea regarding North Korea. And what I mean is, I believe you alluded to this the other day on Russia Today, I believe, where there's sort of a pattern where every 6 months or a year, you'll see a threat or an incident of some sort. And it just kind of becomes a pattern where they always interview people on the streets. They're like, oh my God, what are you doing? What are you doing? They're like, well, I'm shopping. Well, I'm going to dinner. And the same thing with me. My family would call up and they'd be like, well, you know, what's going on? Like after the missile exchange last year or after the Tianjin sinking from 2 years ago, they'd be like, what's going on? What are you going to do? Are you going to leave? I'm like, well, I'm having dinner, you know, I'm going about my business. So, and I really think North Korea is a paper tiger. And I think that there's a number of reasons that's a legitimate view. And I would like to go over some points with you on that. Let's see. First of all, let's put the North Korean military itself in perspective. So I got some numbers here for you. In terms of the annual military budget of North Korea and compared with the rest of the world, it's not very high. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, they're one of the big ones that look at world military budgets. They, I guess they don't really know North Korea because it's so secluded, but they guesstimate 5 to 10 billion annual military budget. At the high end, that's 21st in the world. At the low end, at 5 billion, that's 33rd in the world. So that's behind, to put this in perspective, South Korea is number 12 at 28 billion. So that's, you know, four or five times bigger. Japan is at number 6, surprisingly, 55 billion. The U.S., who North Korea is threatening this week, is number 1 with 700 billion. And half of the world's total global spending on military. So, I mean, I try to think of an analogy for what's going on here. And the only thing I could think of is, like, if you've ever seen, like, an angry drunk get up and try and pick a fight with the biggest guy in the room, you know, and a very unpopular angry drunk at that. It's not like anybody's going to be helping North Korea if some fighting broke out. So
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I can't see this as being a serious threat to anyone, because any sort of attack on North Korea's part would, of course, be instantaneous suicide. But it is absolutely just this thing that keeps coming back every few months to dominate the headlines at any rate. And as you say, it's quite a disconnect between that and what the people on the ground there in South Korea or even here in Japan are actually feeling about these issues. So I guess the question is, do you think anything will come of this latest round of scaremongering other than just a renewed call for talks and more, tongue wagging at the political level?
Well, no, I don't. And there's a few more quick points I want to make about why North Korea is a paper tiger. I was talking to my father on the phone last night. He's reading a book called The Impossible State by Victor Shah. And a point he made was that they're using old military hardware. Now, if you recall, North and South Korea started when the Soviet Union and the United States divided it up, and then back in the 40s, and then the North decided they wanted to hold the peninsula, and they had the fighting, and then the borders were redone, and et cetera. But my point is, the Soviet Union was their biggest trading partner, and as we all know, the Soviet Union is gone. It fell apart in 1991, and that has really affected North Korea, actually. I was reading that there was a huge famine after that. Anywhere from 500,000 to 3.5 million people died in North Korea because they weren't getting the same food trade. And there's an infamous story. I'm sure you've probably heard about this in Pyongyang, the capital. They were building a huge skyscraper hotel, and they couldn't finish it because, you know, they were building it during this whole collapse of the Soviet Union, and they didn't get the resources anymore. So there's this giant steel structure, unfinished building in Pyongyang. So my point is, they're using old military hardware, and that's obviously not going to, you know, go well against the Korean military or any other regional military or world military. You know, as you know, old Soviet hardware is probably not going to hold up well. And there's one more thing here that I want to make. I want to share with you this article. Let me see here. Military defections. 6 North Korean border guards to prevent defections fled. This is by the London Telegraph. And I think this illustrates an interesting side effect or byproduct of a dictatorship. People don't want to fight for a government that doesn't treat them well. Now, this is kind of ironic. They say there's 2 rows of soldiers at the border. There's the initial row with their guns facing outward towards South Korea. And then there's another row in between them with their guns facing inward so that the other guys can't run across the border and run away. to South Korea. And these soldiers, six of them that were tasked with preventing defections, defected. So a little bit of irony there, but I think this illustrates another, foreshadowing of what might happen if war broke out. Most of these soldiers are probably just going to run to South Korea and China.
Certainly, if they thought they could get away with it. And I suppose another aspect of the way that North Korea is a paper tiger might be quite literal, insofar as there's been a lot of speculation about some of the rockets that they've trotted out from time to time in some of their military parades, and whether they are not, in fact, paper mache filled with sawdust. So so there's been a lot of speculation about the extent to which North Korea really even has the military hardware they claim to have. Mm-hmm. So I think you're exactly right. I mean, it is a boogeyman. It is convenient, but certainly it does seem to work to continue bringing people back to the table. But I thought this round of fear-mongering was interesting at the very least because of China and their signing on board with the UN Security Council resolution, which is at the very least a slight change in policy from recent years where they've tried to block such resolutions before.
Yeah, I think they just have to do that. It's, you know, a public image thing. The irony here is, you know, China itself probably could have some sanctions against it for their human rights. But, these days you could make the same case against the United States and, you know, some of the more supposedly open societies. But I think that China being more sympathetic this time around, it's just them trying to save face. I mean, North Korea, even the mainstream media has to admit North Korea is a tyrannical country, even though, ironically, the U.S., you know, this past year passed the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which was, at that time, the only other, the U.S. became the only other country in the world besides North Korea to have on the books that they could arrest and secretly arrest their own citizens. And then China followed suit, citing the U.S., so a little bit of irony there, but I think China was just trying to save face publicly.
All right. Well, I think you make the point that this is not the imminent, urgent military threat that it's being made out to be, and certainly it's not on the front and foremost of the minds of most of the Koreans out there. So perhaps we can steer that conversation towards more what you were looking to talk about with the election and the economy there in Korea. What points do you want to make about what you expect coming up in the year ahead for Korea?
Not a lot of change. First of all, this is the Saenuri Party. I say the Saenuri Party, it was actually the Grand National Party. I'm talking about the party of Park Geun-hye, the winner of the election. And, you know, I wrote an article for a magazine here about this election, and I was thinking, well, I'm going to try to pull up some juicy facts about these candidates. Like, for example, in the U.S., you would look at President Obama and his contender Mitt Romney, and you would say, well, they've been to the Obama had been to the Trilateral Commission, and he'd been involved with the Bilderberg Group, and you could also say make similar statements about Mitt Romney. But I just couldn't find, I think because of the language barrier, my Korean is just, you know, it's just coming along. So I went to some activist groups, and everybody just seems to agree. Anyway, these are status quo candidates. I guess that's where I'm going with this, is they're not going to change anything. Park Geun-hye, she's of the same party. And another thing, the Saenuri Party, they changed the name because there were so many corruption scandals. It was the Grand National Party. They changed the name to the Saenuri Party. And they had to do that because Lee Myung-bak, the previous president, there were so many scandals. I believe his brother is now going to jail for 2 years, basically insider trading, giving people handouts, that kind of thing. But let's see, her policies, basically it's, let me say one thing about Korea. This is a United Nations created country. It is the first United Nations created country in the world. So they're pretty much on board with things like fighting global warming. I know that you've educated your audience about some of the global warming fallacies. You can't get on a bus, or I always joke to people, you can't flush a toilet, you can't have a bottle of soju or do fire just about anything without seeing a sticker on it that says your carbon footprint. So a lot of propaganda there. They're definitely going to be, enforcing carbon taxes in Korea, to say the least. Regarding North Korea, she's going to be the heart. It's the conservative party. That missile launch might have actually got her into office. So she's going to be more hardline about that. Publicly, she's saying that she's going to, try to keep talking with North Korea. But I think that it's going to be hardline policies. So I don't see a lot of changes. The economy, it's going to be more of the same. They're not going to tax Gyeongido, which is the Wall Street of Korea. It's
And
going to be okay.
speaking of the economy, something that we touched on in our last conversation on Corbett Report Radio, we were talking about the drones, and we were talking about some big contracts that were coming in for South Korea to purchase drones from some U.S. companies, and that once again made headlines last month when there was a new study released showing that American defense contractors are, surprise, surprise, the ones who are looking to benefit the most from this Asia-Pacific pivot, so-called, of the United States military. And there's going to be billions and billions of dollars to be made from all of the military hardware that's now being purchased by South Korea and Japan and some of the other allies here in the region. Let's talk a little bit about that and where you think that that the new administration is going to be lining up with Washington in all of this crisis in the Asia-Pacific as they're trying to frame it.
Well, they definitely want a crisis here. It doesn't. I don't think they want an active crisis because then North Korea would fall apart and they wouldn't have that fun threat in the area. So, I actually wrote down here. I want to know who's pulling the strings here, and I want to get back into North Korea a little bit here. We look at Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il, and they're kind of playboys. They play video games and drink a lot of booze and stuff. And I wonder if they're really running the country. So, because I kind of refer to North Korea as the thermostat. What happens when you turn up the heat? Well, everybody gets anxious, they get nervous, they start accepting police state measures, they start voting for conservative candidates. And I want to quote one of my friends here, a Korean friend. I'm not going to give his name, but he said, something like this always happens right before an election, and this refers to the Cheonan sinking, which is often compared to a sort of Gulf of Tonkin type incident for Korea. I'm sure most of your audience knows about Gulf of Tonkin, the staged sinking of a boat that largely led to the Vietnam War, which, by the way, 32% of Koreans distrust the official story. That's Chungang Daily, March 11. So that's a year old. There's probably more people who distrust that. But I don't want to get too much off into that other than I do think that false flags are in the game plan here. They have been in the game plan here in this region. And we have to look out for more. And the purpose here is to keep South Koreans in line, maybe perhaps more police state measures and conservative candidates, etc. It may also, it probably plays into, Japan and China. Having North Korea here is that threat. You can turn up the heat, you can make people nervous and act in different ways, vote in different ways that they wouldn't otherwise do. So.
Of course, it's always a convenient way to ramp up the fear and to get people to rally around flags and to basically do things they wouldn't otherwise do. War is the health of the state, so at least the threat of war is also convenient for that purpose. But last time we talked, you mentioned that you had had your own personal drone sighting there in Korea. Have you had any recently?
I haven't seen any drones, but I want to remind your audience I'm speaking today from, I actually checked yesterday, 35 kilometers, maybe 20 miles from the border. And what I have noticed is more and more as I explore my neighborhood, I've only lived up here for about 9 months, is there's military bases everywhere. You can walk not a kilometer from where I'm talking to you right now, and you can find rows and rows of tanks and missile launchers at a base right here. They keep all these things lined up next to each other. I probably shouldn't say that the recording, but I'm sure North Korea knows that by now. Anyway, I go jogging like another 5 kilometers, and then there's another base, and they're all over the place. So this is a heavily armed, heavily militarized region. And yeah, I did see drone. Well, I believe they were drones. A few about several months ago. So.
Absolutely right. Well, again, there's a lot going on there in Korea, and I don't want to steer the conversation. So, anything that you'd like to bring to the attention of the listeners?
Well, the main idea is look out for potential more Gulf of Tonkin type situations. Another thing I want to get into, and I don't want to put too much emphasis on this because it's we don't know what this is for, but is the U.S. arming the North Korea, the DPK, Democratic Peoples of Korea? Clinton, I'm sure you probably heard about this. Bill Clinton and Donald Rumsfeld sent light water nuclear reactors to the DPK. Now, this is not a conspiracy. I mean, this is openly talked about on MSNBC and that kind of thing. But I mean, you have to question why, light water nuclear reactors. Supposedly, these are not the type for weapons, but you may have heard of the Cox Report where the Congress investigated and Clinton was suspected of sending missile technology to China. So he's got that background. And of course, Donald Rumsfeld, I don't think I need to explain why we should be suspicious of anything Donald Rumsfeld does, especially involving sending nuclear technology to a corrupt state. So.
Well, indeed. And in fact, we can back that up if people want to check into a Guardian article that was written by Randy Ramesh back on the Friday, 9th of May, 2003, called The Two Faces of Rumsfeld. They document in a great degree of detail how he was a non-executive director of ABB, which was this European engineering firm based in Zurich. And he was on the board at the time when that light water reactor deal to North Korea went through. And lo and behold, that was the supposedly, presumably, the same reactors that they eventually used to weaponize some of their material for their first bomb. So, again, Rumsfeld being directly implicated in the arming of North Korea. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, so it probably wasn't for their economic development. I had one economist tell me, don't go with this story. It's just for their economic development. It'll bring peace. But again, I mean, if it was somebody else, maybe, but Clinton and Rumsfeld with their reputations, you can't, yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock in their good intentions. So.
Oh, but he was a non-executive director, so he didn't get to vote at the time or whatever they want
Right.
to say about his non-culpability. At any rate, I'll let people come to their own conclusions about that. But certainly, I think we should be skeptical of their goodwill towards humanity and their wish to do good for the people of North Korea, where, of course, it is the people of North Korea that end up suffering the most from all of this, because, of course, the sanctions really do end up just making millions of people suffer.
Yeah. And another thing I want to talk about briefly is I'm sure you've heard of the RAND Corporation, the think tank that sort of advises, what governments should do, et cetera.
Not
And
only have I heard about it, in fact, I had an episode of my podcast, episode 175, The Rand Corporation Exposed. So I hope people will check that out if they haven't yet.
all right, yeah, I was just going to say you probably did an episode on it. So good. So your audience knows then. And they're always calling for a major war to save the economy. And I'm thinking you got this, we both kind of discussed a paper tiger over here yapping about blowing up, the United States or whoever, trying to scare everybody. And I already mentioned the probably false flags, the Chunnan sinking, and also that there was that missile te or that missile exchange in the off the we upper northwest coast of Korea along the western border. That was also kind of suspicious because you had the USA running a drill. There was a drill during the Chunnan sinking as well. There's always drills associated with false flag events, but they had a drill going on. They were firing missiles into North Korean waters. North Korea told them to stop, and they didn't. And you had missiles exchanged, and people died. On both sides, people were killed. And the point here is like what. You got this RAND Corporation calling for, a bigger war. What if, I don't know, what if a nuclear bomb went off in a US city, and it doesn't even have to be by North Korea, but they could say it was by North Korea and, jack up a whole police state based on that. It's just something to think about, something to look out for.
It certainly is. And of course, as we've documented here quite a bit in the past, false flag events are always that trick up the ace card they hold up their sleeve if they ever want to actually move it into a live war scenario. So it is something we should be aware of, and people should at least be aware of the drills and things that are happening in the area that unfortunately have that tendency once in a while to go live, as it were. All right, lots and lots happening there in Korea specifically, but of course also all around the globe as you're keeping track of on the Last Defense 2012. Tell people again about the website in case they haven't been there before.
Well, first of all, I got to give credit to my partner in crime fighting, Hano Navi. He updates that site every single day, and I try to do what I can to help, but he's really the backbone of that website, and I got to give credit to him. But I mean, if you look at it right now, again, the easiest way to find it, forget about Tumblr.com, just remember the Last Defense 2012, put that into your Google or Start page, and it's the first one that comes up. And we try not to be too focused on one area. For example, like some websites might focus on economics or eugenics or police state. We cover everything. So occasionally we'll write our own articles. I try to do one a month, but we're always posting other articles, and we've posted some of your videos and stuff. So definitely check it out every day.
Absolutely, and of course there's the Twitter and all the Facebook and all of those types of links there as well. So I hope people will check that out and start following the work if they're not already doing it. So we'll leave it there for now,
And we do podcasts. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention we do podcasts too.
Absolutely,
They're not
yes.
regular, but they pop up there here and there.
Exactly, and that's also available through iTunes and all the usual places. All right. Well, Mike Belosky, and a very interesting conversation, and we're definitely going to be keeping our eye on Korea and what's happening there. So I hope we'll be able to talk to you again in the future. Thank you for coming on today.
Sure. Thank you for having me on.